There's probably a sermon in each of Leonard Cohen's songs, but particularly Come Healing strikes a responsive chord in my heart and mind and experience. And be warned here, when you get me up here, you always get psychology. Come Healing. Certainly an invitation for psycho-spiritual exploration for this student and recipient and practitioner of psychotherapy, an enterprise dedicated to healing and to its corollary, personal growth. Though I don't know what Cohen meant by his lyrics and music, the metaphors and phrases have inspired the thoughts that form the thesis for this talk. My thoughts this morning center on this point. The darker times, the challenges, the bad feelings we all experience in the course of our lives offer opportunity for an avenue to the healing the deeper regions of our beings, body, mind, reason, heart, spirit. Of course, that's not to say that healing doesn't come in many less painful ways also. Sometimes, and just in the natural course of things, or through meditation and prayer, or engaging in creativity or exercise, or talking with a friend, or even going to church on a Sunday morning, if it's the right church. But this morning, as Leonard Cohen invites, we gather up the brokenness, for I've found that it's often in the brokenness that gives the impetus for self-reflection and motivation for change and growth that allows the tight structures of ego to give way and let our lives be guided by the call of soul. When I was about 9 or 10 years old, I was a very religious girl, and I still used the word God to denote a being up there someplace, probably. I wanted very much to please him. But what if he wanted me to be a missionary in China? Yikes. No way was I going to be guided by that call. But now I have the word soul. The call of the soul. Let me talk about soul, if it's okay in a UU church to do that. In her book, Broken Open, How Difficult Times Can Help Us Grow, Elizabeth Lesser, a student and teacher of spiritual things, talks about soul in a way that I can relate to. She calls it an endless river of pure energy that flows deeply within us, a low and rich song that hints of joy, liberation, and peace. Soul, she says, wants you to go beneath. It leads downward. Beneath the surface of your troubled mind, your bad moods, your repetitive mistakes and patterns of dysfunction, into what Lesser calls that wise, whole, brave part of self, which carries an ageless longing for truth. Perhaps like Leonard Cohen's longing of the branches to lift the little bud, or the longing of the arteries to purify the blood. It is this soul energy that offers healing, and it's often in the brokenness that opens us to that source. Lesser, in her book, tells this story that illustrates. She had had a long connection with the spiritual teacher and guru Ram Dass, first as his student and later as his colleague, through a spiritual retreat center that they were involved in. It was a complex relationship. While Lesser knew Ram Dass as the wise, compassionate, and charismatic teacher that the world knew, she also found him a man who hated to depend on anyone, who fled the scene if relationships became too sticky, who was used to running the show, traits that made him difficult to work with. Then in 1997, Ram Dass had a life-altering experience. He was lying in his bed thinking about a book he was writing about the subject of aging. As he describes in his book, Still Here, I was lying there in the dark, wondering why what I'd written seemed so incomplete, not quite rounded or whole. I tried to imagine what life would be like if I were very old, not an active person of 65, traveling the world incessantly as a teacher and speaker caught up in my public role, but as someone of 90, say, with failing sight and limbs. I was trying to feel my way into oldness. In the middle of this fantasy, the phone rang, and as he got up to answer it, his legs gave way and he fell to the floor. He had suffered a massive stroke. It was the type of stroke that about only 10% survive. He became confined to a wheelchair. Speech was difficult. One arm mostly useless. Elizabeth Lesser visited him a year after this event and found a different man than she had previously dealt with. This Ram Dass was still the brilliant spiritual guru and still the flawed human, full of old wounds and learned defenses and coping mechanisms. But she found there was a new Ram Dass added, a soul version, that transformed him into a whole and luminous being. She told him that the stroke had made him more human, more a real human being and an eternal soul, both at the same time. He replied in his halting and difficult speech, "Grace. Stroke is heavy grace, fierce grace. Before stroke, happy grace, love grace. Good things kept happening to me. The stroke, lose things. Also grace, fierce grace." Lesser asked what he lost, what fierce grace took away. "Ego," Ram Dass answered. "Ego breaks open and then you see who you really are. Strokes, and I believe other difficult and painful experiences, can call us, with Leonard Cohen, to behold the gates of mercy in arbitrary space where none of us deserve the cruelty or the grace, but where we might find ourselves open to that soul energy that can integrate and temper the best and the worst of our human dimensions." This is not to say that bad things and hard times automatically make us heal and grow, but that would be really ducky. Ram Dass had decades of spiritual practice under his belt, and he had maturity to face the loss of his vitality and function and to move forward into a new experience of life rather than railing against his circumstances or getting attached to his old ways of being. Undoubtedly, he went through some of that in the process of grief and adjustment, but he didn't get stuck there. He recognized what Viktor Frankl describes as the last of the human freedoms, the freedom to choose one's attitude in a given set of circumstances. He was able to make the perceptual shift from the perspective of the ego to the perspective of the soul. He was able to welcome Cohen's heart beneath teaching to the broken heart above. He told his friend, "The ego, it's like this wheelchair. It's a beautiful wheelchair. Use it, enjoy it. Just don't think about it as you. Don't take yourself so personally." Don't take yourself so personally. A charge we can heed on the collective as well as the individual level. Ironically, a charge that leads me to just a small personal rant, which I will insert here. I love this congregation. So intentional about the work of living out our seven principles. But as a liberal group with diverse and free-thinking minds fired by dedication and passion, We can easily become embroiled in brouhahas and brokenness when our differing passions cross paths. Addressing the future of this church in May, Deborah Smith, who was our board president then, stood in this pulpit and posed several inspiring and challenging questions, one of which was, what is spiritual health and can an entity have it? I say spiritual health is an openness to and a connection with that energy and the processes of the soul, as Lesser defines them. And yes, entities, people, groups, and institutions such as ours can have spiritual health. If each individual does not take self too personally, if each person taps into the soul energy, which both inspires and runs beneath the emotional passion that we individually carry for the work of this fellowship, if from that wise whole part of ourselves we bring our oneness of heart to our conflicts and broken places, we contribute to the healing and the health of our collective spirit. That's the end of the preachy part of this talk. It was in one of the darker times of my own life that I learned about not taking ego self so personally and about the relationship that exists between brokenness and healing. I'm referring to the experience of divorce after 17 years of a marriage that I had presumed would last forever. It was perhaps the longings of the soul, the longing to express my deeper nature, or Leonard Cohen's faint fragrance of those promises that I never dared to vow, that constituted my willingness to end that marriage, even though divorce had never been in my family's vocabulary or in my self-image. I continued to feel the pull of that endless river of pure energy that Elizabeth Lesser talks about as soul through divorce and its aftermath, and it eventually swept me into a 30-year career as a psychotherapist, which I have talked about before here as being my most meaningful spiritual experience. But it took several years for the light to get down into the crack that divorce had rendered on my emotional life. On the surface, with well-developed coping and ego defense skills, I carried on parenting, teaching school, working in the church. But below my life of competence, I was wallowing in deep, dark, emotional, and existential pain. Eventually, through the personal therapy program work required as part of my graduate training program, I gave up my focus on the ways that my husband could have been different so I could have been happy, or what choices or places would make me happy now, or which massage or yoga or friends or activities would help me finally feel better inside. The healing came when I turned deeply inward toward the pain. From there inside, an image developed that captured the essence of what my psyche needed to grow and heal. The image is set in a dark terrain. There is a path I am traveling that leads down into the expanse of a deep black lake. On the far side of the lake, I see the same path emerging from the water and winding up over a hill. It is clear that there is no way around the water, and the only way to continue the journey is through the lake and up the path to, on the other side. But the lake is dark and scary, full of unknown forces and menacing possibilities. So I'm stuck, dithering at the edge of the lake, stopped on my life's journey by the fear of my own demons and baggage hidden in the lake. Fortunately, eventually, the call of those soul promises I'd never dared to acknowledge before and which seemed to lie on the other side of the lake lured me into the dark waters to enter the pain I felt, rather than trying to manage it. to confront and claim aspects of myself I'd never dared to meet. In doing so, healing was begun as the ego hold on my intrepid self-identity cracked, and I was opened up to my broken heart, so well covered with coping, open to my deep rage, open to my own foibles and inadequacies, opened to more of the unclaimed, unknown parts of my being, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And thus open to the experience of a conscious connection with the river of soul energy flowing beneath it all. I saw similar healing happen for client after client who moved forward into their own black lakes, confronted their pain and darkness, and in the brokenness found healing and relief. In my 20s, long before I found the salvation of psychology, I knew a young woman whose dark lake has stayed in my mind, though we lost touch more than 40 years ago. We'll call her Anne. Ironically, about the same time as Anne received the award as a senior in high school for being the best girl athlete, she also received a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. This diagnosis was doubly devastating to an 18-year-old girl, as part of her joy in life, as well as her self-identity, came with her participation in sports. She went on to college to fiercely major in physical education, and despite physical limitations and challenges, she became a PE teacher. In the few more years we remained in touch, she reported increasing impairment and a sadly diminishing role in the physical education world. I don't know if or how Anne came to let the light get in. I don't know if she was able to release the image of herself as an athlete, as her body could no longer sustain that, or if she came to make the perceptual shift that Ram Dass was able to make in his greatly altering circumstances. I do know that great fear accompanies letting go of the familiar constructs of who and how we are in the world. Most of us are pretty invested in rigid visions of the way it's supposed to be. To release that vision calls for a fearlessness described in the book Shambhala, The Sacred Path of the Warrior, by a Tibetan Buddhist whose name I can't pronounce without butchering it. But he says this: when we relax with our fear, we find sadness. Sadness hits you in your heart and your body produces a tear. You're about to produce rain or a waterfall in your eyes, and you feel sad and lonely. This is the first tip of fearlessness. You might think that when you experience fearlessness, you will hear the opening to Beethoven's Fifth Symphony or see a great explosion in the sky, but it doesn't happen that way. Discovering fearlessness comes from working with the softness of the human heart. And so it's there, in the softness of the heart, so easily broken. There where Leonard Cohen finds troubledness concealing an undivided love. And there in the river of soul energy, there with fearlessness,
we'll come. Gather at the brokenness, breathe into me now, the fragrance of those promises you never dared to vow, the splinters that you carry, the cross you left.